I come to make all things new through you. Today, New Year's morning, we celebrate new beginnings. It is a time for fresh, new hope in our lives. It is a time also to return to our roots and survey the garden that we are in the process of creating here in this, our broken world. On this New Year's morning, it's a good time to reflect and regain our perspective. I come to make all things new through you. Now consider the first reading today. It's a story about the Garden of Eden. It is really a story of our own human nature today. It is not an historical account. You will not find a Garden of Eden, even if you did go on a dig in the Mideast. You won't find it any more than the people who actually are looking for it will ever find what they think are going to be the fossil remains of Noah's Ark. Genesis is not history. It is a story. Now, that does not mean that it is untruthful. It simply does not tell the truth in the same way that a good journalist would, trying to convince you that he or she was right there on the scene. Nor does Genesis tell the truth in the way that a good scientist does, dealing with the world of appearances and physical properties. Genesis tells the truth, as so very much of the Bible does, in the way that all poets express the truth, using fanciful language. And the truth that it tells us is about our human nature, about us men and women today. The very name Adam simply means man. Genesis is not about our ancestors, but about us at the beginning of a new year. And what does Genesis say about us today? It seems to say that we have messed things up, that we lost a contest with a serpent in a garden, and that we've been suffering the consequences ever since. And the official name that is given to those consequences is original sin. And the way that we have overcome is through Jesus, who came to make all things new through us. The Christmas narrative is not a sentimental story for children. It is the most dramatic intervention of the living God in the history of humankind. Someone living at the time of St. Augustine in the 4th century would have little need of more explanation, because back then, 1600 years ago, they did really believe in a real, literal Garden of Eden. And they even believed that there were two specific people called Adam and Eve. But even then, in the 4th century, they probably doubted that there was a contest ever with a talking serpent. Because, you see, we have always used poetic language and symbols. And one does not need to be a scholar to realize that the serpent stands for the devil, and the devil stands for evil. Now, here is where we come in with a modern explanation for this new year of 84. And we should not be afraid of the word modern. It is simply another way of saying that God does mean that the truth always keeps coming to us in every generation in a way that we can understand it. And the truth that Genesis illustrates for us is that all human beings have inherited a messed up situation. We can, if we wish, call this sin, but it is inherited. It is not the fault of an infant when you hold a child in your arms. Because the child looks innocent, it is innocent. Inherited sin is different from an act that is committed in malice or because of sloth. In fact, it might even be confusing to use the word sin at all. It's really more helpful to speak about evil, and that enables us to make the following conclusions for the new year. The first, we do not live today in a perfect world. Now that's very easy to verify. There's no proof needed. But second, the evil that we've inherited in this process of evolution that we are part of does and can afflict us and cause depression for some people, tempt other people severely, and even for others bring about tragedy and death in their lives. Sometimes it is due to our own perversity or the abuse of our freedom, but not in every case. We did not cause the earthquake, and a child is not responsible for having been born into a society that is filled with violence or racism is endemic. They are innocent. The trouble is that people quite often are tempted to give in to despair or hate God or become angry with God for allowing these kind of things to happen. A week ago today, on Christmas morning, when I came home from three services, the pipe in the ceiling had broken while I was gone, and I walked into 4 inches of water in the house. My first reaction was theological. I said, God has nothing to do with this. She would never break a pipe for me on Christmas morning, and got to work the rest of the night wiping it up. Now that's good theology put into practice. But what I have noticed is that a lot of people in the last few years not only blame God for unseen accidents or events, but even worse, they blame themselves or become guilty because they are angry at God. And then, to compound it all, they remain away from the faith community of the church and deprive themselves of the very healing that they so desperately need. But by putting this into focus, we should begin to understand that we do receive a healing blessing with the beginning of this new year if we understand this about God, as Paul tried to explain this morning. That we, because Jesus Christ became one of us, took on our humanity, we no longer are slaves. We are a free people, free to be responsible in this world, to take care of the garden, to bring creation to completion. We are the sons and daughters of God, people in whom God's creative life dwells now. We are the co-creators of this garden, our broken world, bringing it eventually to completion. And in all of this, we are one with a personal God. Our God is personal, a person. We do not pray to an unmoved mover or an uncaused cause. Our prayer, as it is this morning, is always a personal prayer that is addressed to a person, the living God, the Spirit that dwells within us. as close as the air we breathe and the blood in our veins. And we hold in faith till death this conviction that drives our lives, that this other, this person, the thou of our prayers, is a God who is so close to us that our God does feel our pain. Our God does sympathize with our suffering. Our God does grieve at our losses and enjoys our pleasures. That our God is not removed far away in some place we call heaven, but our God is with us, Emmanuel, right here and now on this earth, dwelling within us, his sons and daughters, his people. And no theology will ever be able to deprive us of that deeply felt gift of faith. Our faith that reassures us this morning that our God is personal and one with us. And that's why we can come to the conclusion that our struggle here during this coming year and afterwards between good and evil still is filled with hope. It doesn't mean that we're going to become silly optimists, expecting only good things in life. But neither should we ever be tempted any longer to curse life or to be afraid of life. There are so many people who are afraid to live, people who, because of that fear, shrivel up in spirit within themselves. They pull the shutters on the windows of their lives and close down their lives in the way that you would close down a summer house. There are pressures in life, and sometimes it feels that we're simply swamped by evil. But the church tells us today that we do have the power to resist, because each of us is made to the image and the likeness of the living God. And our God is a creative God. Our God is creative, and so we are creative, co-creators. And our God gave us a garden to till and to cultivate, this entire world. And that is why we are co-creators by our responsible actions, whether it's in bringing forth children or producing food or furniture or clothing. And the fulfillment that we receive should be ours from the creativity that is ours. And that's how we go about creating a garden in this broken world this coming year. I come to make all things new through you.